This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, June the 6th, 2008.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
The Midwest is swamped and grain prices have skyrocketed. Is it sink or swim time? We'll find out today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with the Illinois Farm Bureau's Director of Marketing and Risk Management. His name is Doug Yoder. Our panelists today are Ellen Dearden of AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, Bridget Chenoweth of AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's open our discussion today with this question. Kurt Kimmel, will December corn futures top the $7 mark?
Well, we feel so. The trade was well aware of the breakout here this past week. A lot of advertisement above $6.50 projects a move on up to $7. Energy market strong. Funds re-entered the market on the buy side. A lot of uncertainty on weather. I wouldn't see why we wouldn't go up close to it.
Bridget Chenoweth?
I would definitely have to agree. I think some good chart action was done this week as we saw prices, like you said, bump above that $6.55 region, which really opens that door up to $7.
And from AgReview, Ellen Dearden.
I would say that the gaps higher on Thursday in the structure of the market favoring the speculative side suggest that we'll top the $7 area.
Here's the numbers as they finished in Chicago for the week in the corn pit. Nearby July contract, a high of $6.63 and a quarter for the week, the low at $5.95 and three quarters, a settlement price at $6.50 and three quarters, 51 and a half cents the gain from last week. December corn, $6.77 and three quarters, up 51 and a quarter. We'll pick up the wheat and the oats as well. July oats at $3.99 and a quarter, up 17 and a quarter. And the wheat, July futures, $8.29 and three quarters, the high. The low at $7.45 and three quarters, a settlement price at $8.11, 49 and a half cents higher. And July futures at $8.95 and three quarters in the wheat pit. We're up 56 and a half. I suppose the thing we ought to talk about, Ellen, is the ending stocks numbers that will be released on Tuesday of this coming week from the World Outlook Board. What kind of numbers do you expect to see?
Todd, I'm really not sure. I think we will see something that's a little bit larger than what we've been seeing, just strictly because the ethanol side has scaled back slightly and so has some domestic feeding. So I'd be looking for, on the corn side anyway, a little bit larger ending stocks.
Yeah, on corn, a little larger, may slow down on ethanol, but our big concern is the feed usage side. It's tied with ethanol. You can't count corn twice. We've seen a big increase in DDG demand, so the overall feed demand is probably going to be lower at some point in time. But overall average gas is 1.42 billion bushels versus 1.38 in the May USDA report.
And Bridget, have you been talking much to producers around Illinois and the Midwest in general, getting an idea of what kind of problems they're now having with all the rainfall from the past week, and how might that not be or not be reflected in the numbers that come out on Tuesday?
Absolutely. I think, you know, like you said, there's still a lot of beans that still need to be put in the ground. I know there's even some farmers out there that are still struggling to get the rest of their corn crop in. That's definitely going to be an issue, and hopefully that's going to take stock in those numbers, as, you know, we could see a little bit of a bump up in bean acres going in if not all those corn acres can get planted.
USDA is probably going to mainly focus on demand on this report here. We are watching the weather and acres and so forth. That will probably be more addressed in the next report once we see what the June acreage report is. We've only had one crop condition report out, so they'll really start to fine-tune yield from here on out once we get a handle on the overall supply side.
Who's the farthest behind? Who's in the most trouble?
As far as getting a crop in, the biggest problem areas are probably Missouri, Iowa, across a big chunk of Iowa, and all the southern two-thirds of Illinois.
And does it make a difference as to corn or soybeans? Are they in trouble in both areas? Are there some areas that got planted in corn that are not in beans at this point, too?
I think there's areas that got planted in corn that the corn stands are good, but there's a good deal of southern part of Illinois and Missouri that planted corn and really have very poor stands or are going to need to replant some of those guys for the second time.
Yeah, they're going to replant for the second time, and they'll be bumping up against a whole bunch of crop insurance things. They're late in the year. How big of a problem? It's a big problem if you've got it, but how big of a problem is it nationwide?
Well, we're talking about 5 million acres of corn that hasn't been planted for the first time. And so then we've got replant acres on top of that. We may still be looking at 1.2 to 2 million acres that aren't planted or may not get planted to corn.
Kurt, you agree with that number, 5 million acres, Richard, too?
Right now, but they're still wanting to get it in. And like was said, it'd probably be about 1 to 2 million acres in there that might not or be switched or preventing planting.
I'm still wanting to get it in, Bridget, and I don't know whether you'll know the answer to this question. We've talked with the agronomist on campus before about whether they had to switch out to shorter season varieties. The answer was no. But the later in the year you get, the more likely, I suppose, that they might have to or want to try that. What are you hearing from producers? Can they get hold of shorter season varieties? Are they going to try to do this? Or are they just stuck at this point?
You know, I was talking to agronomists today, and I know, like, in our area, they were saying using that June 10th as a cutoff date for getting the corn put in the ground. And there also brings up the question, if farmers do decide to switch into these beans, are the beans going to be available?
Well, let's take a look at the bean numbers and talk about them as well. July futures a $14.88 high this week, low at $13.46.5. They gained 90 cents to $14.57.5 in the July futures. November, your new crop, beans at $14.39.5, up 95 cents from last week. Kurt, who leads this market? Soybeans or corn, and which one's in worse condition?
Probably crude oil.
Well, go ahead. Talk. Because we made new contract highs in corn this week. We made new contract highs, all-time contract highs, I suppose, in crude oil.
Oh, boy. We used to dream about moving crude oil 10, 11 bucks a year. We moved it in one day, 11 bucks. The two-day gain was like $16 off that low. You know, speculative crowd came back in when they found out that, they're not going to be limited on positions, a little tension in Iran, and, you know, off we go. But the whole speculative crowd was in the whole commodity sector this week. So as long as the inflationary fears stay around and we don't see a major correction in the outside markets, I imagine beans are going to hang in there, barring Argentina does not solve their strike and put a bunch of beans on the world market.
Now, what's the most often asked question that you're getting from producers this week, whether it's corn, soybeans, wheat, even livestock?
You know, I thought it was really interesting. The brunt of the calls that I took today on corn, about half the guys wanted to sell corn in some fashion, particularly by buying puts, and the other half were interested in buying calls. So I thought that it really ran the whole gamut. But the big question, I think, was how high is high was the kind of question on this new crop corn, at least.
And I suppose you want to go back and answer that. We talked about $7, but how high is high for corn?
Well, I think your near-term stuff is up there in the 7 to 720 range. And I don't know if that's the high. It just depends. If we do that on the short term within the next week or two, then we may still have another higher objective.
And I'm going to stay with you for just a second. What kind of numbers can you work with if you, you're talking about losing 5 million acres? What kind of numbers can you work with as an ending stock?
Well, I was looking at just assuming that with a reduction in 1 to 2 million acres, you may end up with a crop size that's around 11.4 to 11.7. You'll really have to scale back demand to have ending stocks number at 800 million bushel.
Which is what USDA, I think, probably is going to want to stay at one
at
way
least,
or the other.
At least.
And can you think about a price tag with that one?
Oh, I don't even think that you want to venture a price tag at this stage of the game.
Anybody else care to venture a price tag in that form? Bridget?
You know, like I said, it's tough right now to put a price tag on it. There's still so many uncertainties going forward. We still have the weather this whole summer to, you know, play into the card. So to put a number on it, I think it's really difficult right now.
And Kurt, how far along do you think producers are in general? Not how far along are your producers, but how far along are they on sales on corn? and then maybe you can turn your number into it. How far along should they be? And that maybe that's your number, maybe it's not. It depends on how well you've done the job of marketing. And what do they do about that at this point? Do they need to turn around and buy it back? What do they write it out? What happens?
Well, when you look at your input costs and where the market is today, I think sale is a sale. I mean, these are still profitable levels. Yeah, it does feel bad that maybe some sales were made earlier. We've got the cash grain sold at 50%. We feel you need to be half sold on a conservative yield estimate. We've got the other 50% covered put options. You know, if this market turns around, drops $2 or $3 in corn, $4 or $5 in beans, at least you got some downside protection. But if we continue to see weather and the funds push this market higher, we still got the other 50% to market yet.
We're absolutely there in the same boat. We're 50% both on corn and beans, and that's what we're holding.
We've got some put coverage as well, but we probably have bumped up our cash sales in the 40% range and about 30% with puts.
Are you more concerned, Ellen, at this point about skyrocketing soybean prices as skyrocketing corn prices?
Up until Thursday, I wasn't, but certainly after Thursday's gaps up, you have to be a lot more cautious. I think it's a good thing to say that we'll make new contract highs on everything, old crop, new crop in here, and the spreads looked a lot more friendly at the end of the week than it did at the beginning of the week. So I think you got to be looking for some higher prices in that November bean. Kind of suggest that, you know, if we can hold closes here above 14.20, which is below Friday's close, that the door's open to 15.5 or so.
Southern Illinois has had a very difficult time putting soybean or putting corn crop in the ground. I don't know what they'll think about nitrogen. They don't probably have it on because they don't fall apply. Will they go, you think, just to beans at this point?
They'll go to beans or Milo, I think.
Which is the better choice? We don't often talk about Milo, but I know they put it in the ground.
We don't talk about Milo, but the crop insurance people in the southern part of this state are really pushing the Milo, and I think it's from the feed standpoint as much as anything, and secondarily suggest soybeans.
Is that because there's so much livestock there,
I think that's a good thing to say is that the livestock men will need feed.
Maybe we can ask Doug Yoder, or maybe he can remind us about that and think about it a bit when we get to him later in the program.
But they'll have wheat to feed. They'll have wheat to feed because this wheat's going to be junk.
Yeah, let's talk about that just a bit. What are we hearing about wheat at this point? Wheat doesn't, man, it doesn't handle rainfall very well. How bad is the crop now?
Well, in the Western Belt, it's real well. I mean, yields are coming in better than expected, but, you know, here in the Eastern Belt, it depends on the temperatures and the moisture situation, it can turn south in a hurry and through here. And, you know, they projected the record yields on the supply-demand report. We're expecting a little bigger carryout due to better yield expectations.
Wheat futures look like this for the week. A July contract at 829 and three-quarters top, low at 745 and three-quarters, and the July settled at $8.11, 49 and a half cents higher on the week. July of 09, wheat settled at $8.95 and three-quarters up, 56 and a half. Bridget, what do you think about the wheat market? Where does it stand technically?
You know, technically, I think the market looks a little bit better than it has for a while. We saw prices in the July contract were able to pop up above that 200-day moving average. So I think here in the short term, the July contract has the possibility of going back to that May high of 844.
Let's talk about the livestock as well. June live cattle this week at 96.10 high, a low at 93.70. Their settlement price, $2.67.5 lower, 93.85, the settlement for the June live cattle. August feeders at 112.25, we're down 377.5. June lean hog futures, $77.40 the high, the low at 74.85, and a settlement price at 75.12.5, down $2.62.5 from last week. I suppose that the livestock producer, as you suggested earlier, Kurt, was feeling okay or starting to feel a little better, but now the pinch is back on. Will liquidation really come in this marketplace at some point?
Well, that's the fear as we move down the road. So far in the beef complex, we're looking at tighter numbers next year anyway. You look at the next spring, we're looking at a $17 premium. But the hog is the main concern area there with Canada already liquidated. Fears the U.S. will start to liquidate. So we probably see plenty of meat on the market here over the near term. However, though, as mentioned earlier, we're going to have an opportunity to probably feed some feed wheat. Do you feed $7 corn or $7 wheat? So there could be a little relief there.
Actually, we have wheat prices below corn prices right now, so that certainly could bring us some of that feed. I thought the feeder cattle had the worst-looking chart this week with the gap down on Friday morning technically look pretty bearish, and that just is reflective of the higher corn price. We are going to liquidate some sows in here. We haven't really done much there.
We haven't done much, and that, I think, is probably part and parcel of the way it's constructed. I mean, that particular marketplace is constructed. Will the big producers decide to actually liquidate at some point?
I think it's going to take them another 6 months before we see a big amount of liquidation. That means we've got to see $6 corn prices for a while.
What else does it mean across the board in that? Anything else that not liquidating that herd does to the marketplace, other than chew through a corn crop, I suppose?
Watch out for the poultry liquidation, too.
Okay, thanks much. We'll talk with Doug Yoder from Illinois Farm Bureau in just 2 minutes. This is Commodity Week from Public Radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
I'm State Climatologist Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. While the wet weather continues, the statewide May precipitation was 5.8 inches, 1.5 inches above average, and the 20th wettest May on record. Also, this was the third wettest January through May on record, with 22 inches of precipitation, 7 inches above normal. More rains fell in this first week of June, especially in central Illinois. Rainfall totals range from 1 to 2 inches in southern Illinois, 2 to 7 inches in central Illinois, and another 1 to 2 inches in northern Illinois. Cisco, near Decatur, reported 7.74 inches this week, the highest in the state. Average June rainfall is around 4 inches in central Illinois, so many stations have already reached that threshold. The State Water Survey sampled soil moisture from 19 sites around the state on June 1st, and found that levels in the top 6 inches were between 25 and 75% above average for this time of year. After a cool May, when temperatures were running about 4 degrees below average, the first week of June was much more summer-like, with highs in the 80s and 90s with higher humidity levels. The National Weather Service forecast calls for warmer than average temperatures with above average precipitation over Illinois for much of the next week. We can expect highs in the upper 80s and low 90s. The next chance for significant rain looks to be on Thursday. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm State Climatologist Jim Angel.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
I'm Todd Gleason. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded June the 6th, 2008. Our studio panelists are Bridget Chinoweth of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. And joining us now is the Illinois Farm Bureau's Director of Senior Director of Marketing and Affiliate Management. His name is Doug Yoder. Thanks for joining us, Doug.
My pleasure, Todd.
Hey, let's talk baseball first. You'll be here in Champaign, I think, over the Father's Day weekend for the Hardball Basher with the Champaign Dream, aren't you?
Absolutely. 12-year-old Dream Team. And I tell you what, hearing you guys talk about, you know, the wet weather delaying planting, it's been tough on spring baseball around here, too, hasn't it?
Oh, I guess so. And Kurt Kimmel has a son on, Bloomington Renegades? Which color?
Black.
Bloomington, and you're in 13-year-olds, and I have one on the 11-year-olds, Mohammed Diamond Dogs, and I think everybody's been rained out. But that creates not only a problem for those of us who have boys playing baseball and the rest of the sports, but also for producers, and in particular for crop insurance, I suppose. What kinds of things are you seeing and talking to producers about at this time, Doug?
Well, phones are ringing, Todd, regrettably. You know, we are in a pinch here with some crop insurance deadlines. In fact, I was just down this morning, Friday morning, to Bond County. It's kind of funny. I don't think I've ever attended a crop insurance meeting with producers on June 6th before, but they had a packed house this morning. They have a lot of questions, a lot of concerns about, you know, replant conditions, prevent planting, failed acres, things like that. And we're right in the heart of some very key dates for crop insurance. June 5th is kind of a misnomer, but it's called the final planting date for corn. And what that means is for every day after that, the day plant corn after that June 5th date, they lose 1% of their crop insurance guarantees. for 25 days, and after that it switches into another category. So we're right in the heart of that. A lot of problems, as I believe it was Ellen mentioned, the two-thirds lower, mainly the lower third of Illinois, a lot of late planting, a lot of replanting going on. Crop insurance, the best thing I can tell the audience, I guess, Todd, is to really stay in touch with your agent and your adjuster. There's some very complicated rules. Really don't know if we can do justice to all of them in this short span, but there's some very specific guidelines and rules that they do need to follow to make sure they're in compliance for all their, to make sure they get all the coverage and guarantees they can.
Well, Doug, what was the feeling down there at your meeting? Were they going to try to stick with corn or come back and switch to beans?
I guess I have to say at this point they are trying their best to stick to corn, but they realize, you know, they're saturated. There's more rain in the forecast, and, you know, the clock is ticking on this 1% a day. That's not good. Obviously, they're looking at, you know, obviously sometime next week at the earliest before they can get back in there. That's if it doesn't rain anymore. When I left, they were under severe thunderstorm warning already, so. I think the questions were mainly geared towards, you know, trying to get corn planted now and what that does to their guarantees, and then two, what if they have to switch to beans. Most of them were saying they would plant, you know, corn here for another couple of weeks, obviously. Once we get close to that July 1st date, you know, I saw a lot of head shaking that you probably just can't do that.
Did they ask about Milo? Or did they talk about
it? I heard you guys talk about that earlier. That did not come up this morning. I honestly can say I did not hear that question at all. No one questioned planting Milo.
Is there a point when that insurance kicks in where it gets too late where they're going to pay for them not to plant their crop?
Yes, there is. The way it works is, as I mentioned, that June 5th date, that starts the clock on 1% loss of guarantee per day after that for 25 days. So that would basically be June 30th. And after that, they can declare prevent planting if they just can't get it planted by then. Then they get a prevent plant guarantee, and they're free to switch to another crop. And at that point, they can choose. For example, if they switch to beans at that time, they can choose to either insure that second crop as beans or not insure it. They do get a choice. And it they have some choices along the way, too. If they actually plant beans, switch to beans on that unit and plant beans before that July or June 30th date, then they do forfeit some of their corn guarantee, and they lose some of the flexibility that they have built into the policies.
Doug, I want to switch gears just a hair and talk about this June 30th report. We're already skipping past next week's supply-demand report. But on the June 30th report, how in the heck is USDA going to be able to project those or to give numbers for those acres? We don't have to report acreage to the FSA office until July, so how's the June 30th going to work out?
That's a very good question, and to be quite honest, I'm assuming that they will rely on their weekly planning progress reports, but to be quite honest, I don't understand those reports all spring. Those people do a great job. I don't mean to doubt what they're putting out, but I'm surprised at how high they've been all spring. For example, 92% planted in corn here in Illinois this past Monday really had me scratching my head, because I can go down to southern Illinois and see an awful lot of black dirt that has not been touched yet.
Well, Doug, maybe it's been planted once and it's been underwater and it's just gone again.
Well, there is obviously some of that, but based on what I heard this morning, there's an awful lot of ground, like I said, that, well, for example, Monday of this week, I had one of our directors tell me out of 1,300 acres, he has 130 planted, period. He's in southeastern Illinois. There's a lot to do down there yet.
You talk to your counterparts in other parts of the Midwest, and what are they telling you?
Similar stories. I think Ellen wrapped it up or summarized it adequately earlier. Missouri's in trouble. Parts of Iowa's in trouble. Southern Indiana's in trouble. You know, the northern portions of the three I states, I think, are in the best shape. You know, northern Illinois is in pretty good shape. I can talk to people up there, and they feel pretty good about it. And I think that's similar in the other three I states as well. Obviously, there's pockets here and there within those areas that are behind, but for the most part, it's the southern tier that's really feeling it right now.
Well, can you do the number crunching off of that and then backtrack it and get some kind of idea of where you think the crop might come in for corn?
Well, yes, you can. I have not done that, and it would be pretty unscientific, to be quite honest, because like I said, it's pretty widespread. There's corn that's planted. They're going to have to replant. Now, here's another thing we haven't talked about yet is on the FSA side. We mentioned that they really need to stay in close contact with their crop insurance people to make sure they're doing everything right, but that also goes towards FSA. They've got to declare prevented plant acres or failed acres with the FSA by certain dates also, and that's going to play into some of the government programs as well, possibly.
As usual, do those vary by where you are in the state?
Yes, it does. Yeah, but some of those dates do vary from the south up to the north.
Doug, any marketing ideas if you're signed up for crop insurance, any type of change in strategy or any innovative ideas you've heard?
Well, that did come up this morning, and obviously there's two, you know, as you talk about their plans to switch acres, you know, from corn to beans and or Milo or whatever the case may be down south, and that one of the first things that was brought up today was they need to try to get that corn planted to make sure they can fill the contracts. There's quite a bit of corn sold already, as you guys mentioned, so they got to make sure they have enough crop in the ground to, you know, to at least ease those fears. And then the second fear, before I answer your question there, Kurt, the second fear I heard this morning was, you know, lack of seed. If they have beans planted and they need to replant those beans, or two, if they need to switch from corn to beans, they're having trouble in some areas finding enough seed beans available. And in crop insurance world, that is not an insurable cause of loss. So if you need to replant beans and can't get them, that's not an insurable loss. So people need to take that to heart here as well. And if they think they need extra seed beans, to start trying to source some, I would say, here pretty quickly. But to answer your question, Kurt, you know, as far as marketing ideas from here on out, you know, I think it depends on where the listening audience is located. If you're up north and you've got it in the ground and feel pretty good about it, I think that gives you a lot of comfort to step up. And whether you're hitting high or not, you're selling some very good prices if you feel good about your crop right now. I agree with all of you folks that there's some upside left. You know, we did some good things in this market this week, and you got to be encouraged by that with the potential that brings. But you know, also we're in that volatile period right now, and the market certainly relies on some of these government numbers. And right or wrong, the government said we had 92% of our corn planted in Illinois as of this week. So I'm sure they watch those things.
I guess I'm just looking a little bit forward. Do you have any ideas about making any aggressive sales or sales into the 09 crop year for corn and beans?
I've always been an advocate of that, to be quite honest, and I think that this, you know, we shouldn't back off that completely. I can understand people wanting to be comfortable with their sales, especially if they just can't get this crop in the ground this year. That's going to make them even more hesitant to go out on that limb before. But, you know, we're talking extremely profitable prices, and we've all lived through a very scary time back in February and March when a large part of our producers in Illinois couldn't access forward contracts, and our phones were ringing off the hook when they tried to call their elevators on nice rallies and couldn't get it sold for this fall or next January. That caused a lot of concern. So I guess I'd encourage people to think, you know, along those lines too. With these escalating input costs we've got, if we can't get it marketed, you know, we've got some significant risk out there. So, you know, I would also take that into account, that, you know, if your marketplace does allow you to sell extremely profitable prices, I wouldn't look to get horse in the mouth too long.
Doug, we appreciate you taking the time today.
Anytime. Thank you very much.
And we'll see you at the Hardball Bash, okay?
Sounds good. Good luck.
All right. Doug Yoder is with the Illinois Farm Bureau, where he's the Senior Director of Marketing and Affiliate Management, and, of course, with the Champaign Dream baseball team as well. Time now for a final word from our guest in studio, Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
Keeping in line with what Doug just mentioned, if you haven't been able to plant and you do have a lot of forward sales in the cash market, please be in touch with your elevator and keep them abreast of what's going on.
Bridget Chenoweth with AgriVisor LLC.
I think you really have to take advantage of these prices right now and may want to, you know, use some options and protect some of your downside risk.
And Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Yeah, we've been pushing options heavily. We feel that's a good way to put a floor on you but leave your upside open.
That is this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a good and a very safe week.